President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this August the 30th on the West Coast, now August the 31st on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to welcome all those who may be listening in tonight around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and a place I got to visit for 2 quick hours today. Talked about a lot of different things, as we may tonight. I find out of all the stories that are out there, probably the one that coincides with much of the truth that we've been putting out on this show night after night, regardless of what guest we have on, is the fact that there have been numerous reports of people finding large amounts of 2-butoxyethanol, which is one of the main ingredients in Corexit 9500. There's another version, 9527A. This is what they call a dispersant. It's a surfactant that causes the oil to sink below the surface and break it up somewhat, but it coagulates a little bit lower from the top of the water. And it's been sprayed around areas around Florida, and it's been discovered in a pool 1 hour north of Tampa in town or city, I guess, Homosassa, Florida. And the people that have actually been swimming in their home outdoor pool have been getting sick. And there's a lab result that was done on this Corexit to the tune of 50.3 parts per million of Corexit and 2/100 parts per million of arsenic. Very interesting thing to find in your swimming pool. I think most of you would agree. And despite the terms that they like to call those that bring this kind of information to the forefront, to the public's knowledge, outside of mainstream media, this has been confirmed by independent labs that do this kind of research for a lot of people, including governmental agencies. So it's a very interesting point to bring out. We've been talking about what the Gulf of Mexico disaster is really about. And we must be hitting the mark because the attacks on various talk show hosts and journalists do not cease. But it's okay. It's part of the game. If you're not over the target, you're not going to get any flack, as they say. Well, I'd like to bring tonight's guest on board. He hosts his own talk show, and he comes on this show to share the information, despite what some think. The show is heard Monday through Friday on the Micro Effect radio network. It's called The Story Behind the Story. And we bring back our regular Monday night guest, my good friend, Dr. H. Huat. Dr. Huat, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. Thanks so much. I wish I could have heard you with Drew, but I was busy with appointments and all that today and couldn't break away. But he's always talks highly of what you bring to the table on his great show as well. So, you know, I'd like to kind of just broach a topic tonight. I hope Dr. Mike Castle's listening up tonight because this is going to make him smile, I'm pretty sure. But this is the business section of the my local newspaper, Don. Sunday, yesterday's business section of the Standard Examiner newspaper. And I just usually just scan headlines and then go to the funny papers. But this was really amazing. I'm sitting there, I read it, and my jaw dropped, and I said, I got to discuss this. with Don. The headline is a story it's a reprint by an author named Anthony Wood, and it was put in the Philadelphia Inquirer newspaper. And the headline is "Scientists Try to Harness Super Winds That Once Carried Bombs." Isn't that interesting? This is a whole section, as there's pictures and everything here of so-called balloon bombs. The balloons were part of a Japanese campaign during World War II to ignite forest fires and kill civilians and incite panic in the United States. In 1945, people were killed when they stumbled upon balloons that had been launched from Japan and carried by the jet stream to the mainland of America. Now, as I share this article, there's a couple of things that really stand out. I just want to bring them out. That's again, Philadelphia Inquirer, Mr. Anthony Wood, quote, "The man from the Forest Service burst into the switchboard room with orders for the young operator. Keep quiet, he told Cora Connor, 816. Stay put." The day was May 5th, 1945. Six people lay dead in the nearby Oregon woods, their bodies arrayed like spokes in a wheel, victims of a bomb attached to a balloon. Launched in Japan, the balloon had ridden ferocious high-altitude winds discovered by a Japanese scientist. Now, far more is known about the jet stream winds. They detonate storms, such as last winter's record snows. They conspired in this summer's heat. They mark the boundaries of winners and losers in a warming world. And someday they just might turn on the lights in downtown Philadelphia. But in the final months of World War II, they played a different role. They were highways of war. This week, the world will mark the 65th anniversary of Japan's surrender. However, the little-known story of the balloon bombings remains vivid in the memories of a small few Americans. Few number, including Cora Connor. Now get this. Quote, "I was just numb," she says. "It took 40 years before I was allowed to talk to anybody about this." 40 years from the date of 1945, so she didn't even start talking about it till 1985. This is, and then it goes on, Don, and there's a whole section. It's called Attack on America, and it's a map. In 1944 and 1945, Japan launched 9,300 bomb-laden hot air balloons across the Pacific, the first sustained enemy air attack on U.S. soil in U.S. history. Have you ever heard of such a thing, Don?
No, but I was going to ask, and this is not to belittle the plight of the people that were killed by those bombs. By any chance, were those balloons piloted by crash dummies?
No, they were just, it has a picture of them. It's called a flash bomb. The balloons were made of varnished paper. They weighed 152 pounds. They measured 32 feet across, 9.8 meters. So they would send these up, and they would hit the jet stream, and they were calculated to get over the landmass of America, and they would come down, and they had a flash bomb, the flash bomb fuse. The bomb releases the fuse, and a 15-kilogram anti-personnel bomb was attached. And then a 5-kilogram incendiary bomb was also attached. There were sandbags, an automatic altitude control device. These were quite sophisticated little buggers. So they launched them from Japan. They covered 6,200 miles, 9,978 kilometers of ocean with the jet stream, and they came down. And here's a map of where these naughty little things hit America. I can't believe this, Don. About 25 bombs hit Oregon, about the same number in Washington. Northern California, about the same. But Nevada had 2, 4, 6 bombs hit. Utah, 2, 4, 5. Idaho, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. Montana, a whole bunch of them, golly, about 25. Ditto with Wyoming. All the way into North Dakota. North Dakota had 3. South Dakota had about 10. Nebraska, about 10. Kansas, 1. Iowa, 3. Texas, 2. Arizona, 2. But get this, Michigan had 3. All the way into Michigan.
What do you suppose was the reason this didn't hit the mainstream?
That's what this was an absolute well-kept secret even immediately after the war ended.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I mean, who knows how many people were killed off of this? Here's how they worked. They said they were launched. The activating fuse was lit during early morning launch. And 55 minutes later, roughly an hour, the altitude control device was triggered. And so, this is day one. By day two, the balloon gas was warmed by the sun, and they would hit their maximum altitude of 38,000 feet. So at night, the gas would cool, but the balloons would lose altitude. And when they started losing altitude, it triggered these sandbags to be released, so the balloons would stay at 30,000 feet and been carried in. And it only took them, by the fourth day, they were over American soil, dropping their bombs and cutting the forest fires. Unbelievable. These are nasty little things. And nobody, I had never heard of such a thing, that
no,
American soil was bombed. I mean, we talk about the Doolittle raid. I think if the American people knew what was going on, I think it would have been they would have been very upset, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm. I once reported on the Battle of Los Angeles, and from 1942, where they were shooting at saucers flying off the West Coast. And they weren't hitting anything, but they sure were firing a lot of weapons, and there were photographs of it. Some of the photographs hit the major newspapers in Los Angeles, but they suppressed the information. And then, you know, of course, you've got all those party people down there. Even back, 60, 70 years ago, they were partying like crazy. So
they were.
If anybody was really outside and saw that, they wouldn't have known what they saw.
Well, this is where it gets interesting. I kind of want to get into this, and this is where I was hoping Dr. Mike would be listening. So the bomb blast that killed 6 in Bly, Oregon, had its origins in the work of a gentle Japanese genius, Watsaburo Uishi, according to his granddaughter, treasured his chestnut trees and cultivated morning glories, making pilot balloons and making 1,228 observations between March 1923 to February 1925. He became the first scientist to document high-speed winds that howl 3 to 9 miles above the Earth, where warm and cold air meet. He first published his pioneering work in Esperanto, but this universal language never caught on, and his findings were ignored and overlooked. In the war, U.S. commanders relied on educated guesses about high-level winds. Preparing for a bombing raid in 1944, a team tried to forecast winds 30,000 feet over Tokyo. Quote, "We had very little data," says a memoir by the late Reed A. Bryson, then a meteorologist stationed in Guam. He and his colleagues estimated the United States planes would fly into west winds of 168 knots, or 193 miles per hour. The general who ordered this forecast called them stupid, Bryson said. Surely they meant 68 knots. Do it all over. But we came back with the same answer. Forget it, the general said. Our pilots will measure the real winds. The result was disastrous, Bryson wrote. Quote, the planes couldn't fly upwind because they were practically standing still, sitting ducks with the Japanese anti-aircraft fire. A returning pilot told Bryson that, quote, it was strange to see the Japanese coast approaching on the radar screens, then to see it stand still. We measured the winds at 196 miles per hour. The general eventually apologized to Bryson. Finally, Bryson wrote, the Air Force consulted the nation's top meteorologist, the University of Chicago's Carl Gustav Rossby, said the pilots must be encountering the winds of the jet stream. Now, since the war, the article goes on to say, experts have made great leaps in understanding, mapping, and predicting the wind's behavior. Now they're a standard feature of computer models that forecast the weather. But thanks to their global span and wild nature, the winds remain difficult to actually measure. And this paragraph just really stands out. Quote, in recent winters, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, has sent high-altitude hurricane hunter planes over the North Pacific to bomb the jet stream, dropping instrument packs into the winds and unraveling their secrets. The researchers are building a much more intricate mosaic than the jet stream's likeness on TV weather maps. The mosaic, far from complete, depicts a complex system of winds that circumnavigate the globe in parabolic and serpentine patterns, distorted and buckled by land masses and wild clashes of air. Most important are the polar and subtropical jets. Both form at boundaries of warm and cold air. The greater the contrast, the stronger the winds. They set off storms by lifting air violently skyward. Think of a gust lifting smoke from a chimney and inciting the blaze in a fireplace. Even when jet stream winds slacken in summer and settle into patterns, the results can be disastrous. Areas close to jet stream storm tracks may suffer relentless rains. Areas south of those boundaries dry out dangerously, allowing heat to build. That's what happened this summer in the eastern United States and Russia. It wreaked calamity in Europe in 2003 when heat waves killed as many as 50,000 people. Now, the jet stream winds appear to be on a subtle and possibly ominous migration, say research at the University of Utah. Hey, here for Utah. And the Carnegie Institution of Washington in Stanford, California. Oh, my goodness.
Is there any information about controlling the patterns on the ground? For instance, if you look at the frequency of tornado or tornadic activity in Oklahoma, parts of Missouri, Tennessee, Kansas, are they associating this with HAARP or...
Well, I went and did some research on the internet after reading this story last night and this morning, Don. And NOAA, they can bomb, they can set detonations on the jet stream, and it causes these fluctuations to move. So, yeah, they're mapping it and proving it. This is happening as early as the mid-90s. So we don't really need HAARP. HAARP can do this, can affect the jet stream too, but they have it down to computer science. They can make the weather patterns change with manipulating the jet stream. There's no doubt about it, just based on this little tip of the iceberg news report.
Yeah. Well, we've certainly had a cool breeze in Washington, D.C. over the last year and 8 months, haven't we?
Yeah.
Of course, so, that's a figure of speech. So.
Yeah. Something's wide open there. But the article goes on to say, quote, the winds have nudged northward in the northern hemisphere and may be gaining in height, perhaps because of worldwide warming. Yeah, please, right. Such long-term shifts would have profound impacts on storm tracks and drought zones, say the Carnegie experts, including Ken Caldera. Caldera and co-author Christina Archer examined data from 1979 to 2001. They found that there's a subtle northward shift in the polar jet correlating with global warming, though they said it was impossible to know if it was a natural fluctuation. How can it be natural if you got NOAA up there bombing the heck out of it?
Yeah. You know, it reminds me, too, of this phenomenon that suddenly started in the late 80s and into the 90s, this El Nino. And then El Niña, which were these storms coming off of the Pacific with tons of rain hitting Los Angeles, where we even know from songs that it never rains in California, you know, but, you know,
like
monsoons, yeah. And then there's the phenomenon of the Santa Ana winds. When did those start? You know, they blow toward Santa Ana, not from Santa Ana. Pretty much across the state, you know, in a southerly direction. Which is very, very unusual because most wind patterns come off the ocean and move from west to east all the way across the country. So, you know, there's got to be some manipulation going on there too, adding to the smog as well.
Yeah, I'm just saying what we don't know that our government has kept secret from us. This thing has two shockers in it, okay?
Sure.
9,300 incendiary and anti-personnel bombs, of which hundreds hit their mark, and I had never heard of such a thing. Wow, they kept that secret pretty close to the vest, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
And now this whole thing about what NOAA is doing. Man, oh man.
Yeah, that's now how did you find that? Was it just by accident or somebody?
I said I was just writing our paper.
Oh.
It's a Standard Examiner of Ogden, Utah in the business section. You can go online. It's www.standard.net, and go to the business section, and you can see the whole thing. Balloon bombs is what it's called.
Okay.
I can't make this stuff up, man.
No, it's, it portends of everything else that that went on during World War II. I mean, the whole thing was a setup from one end to the other. Especially in regard to Roosevelt.
Yeah, and the 2010 book, this is copyrighted. The book is called Floating Vengeance, Japanese Balloon Attacks on Michigan. How about that? By Mike Unsworth. Floating Vengeance. Well, Michigan only had, by this map, two bombs. What about Washington and Oregon and California? They got plastered. Montana, Wyoming. And you see, just like, it's amazing.
Now, if they had used their brains back in those days, who knows how well off they were financially. They may have had a lot of gold, but they were in the business of stealing it, that's for sure. They could have made a lot of money out of long-distance takeout orders of sushi, don't you think?
Now, Don, I mean, they that, it, by that, by 5 days, it had been wormy. They couldn't do that.
Well, they could have sprayed a little Corexit on it. You know,
oh, that's,
that would protect it. You know?
Oh, yeah, you're right there. Or maybe at 30,000 feet high, it would freeze up and be crusty sushi. Well, crunchies.
It's just, but, you know, that it, thought was there. I had to take advantage of it. You know?
Well, what, your mind, your mind's amazing, amazing trapdoor. What, yeah, speaking of these jet streams, just, you know, does, don't most, most commercial airlines travel at 30,000 feet?
Depends on the plane. I think 30 to 40,000 feet. You know, I've heard it announced that, you know, plane, a certain plane I was on was that high. Not always. Sometimes 35,000 or 38,000. You know, it depended much on the jet stream and turbulence and, you know, some of those factors. But
so they're obviously mapping those out for the commercial planes. You can't really go on, you know, at 195 miles an hour. They're going to have to, you know, use them. They're going to set their flight pattern based on where the stream would flow with them, you would think, huh?
Mm-hmm. This story is even on the National Museum of the Air Force website.
What, this one I just read to you?
Yeah, yeah, the essence of it. Maybe not word for word, but there's, it's up there, you know. I got a few listeners telling me they've heard the story some years ago.
Wow, oh, see, I guess I got to get out more. I had no idea that the Japanese little devious little guys had bombed America. I had no idea.
Yeah, this was supposed to be the answer to the Doolittle raid on Tokyo in April of 1942.
Uh-huh. Well, they kept it a pretty good secret. I've never heard of such a thing. Again, the orders from the Forest Service, the government, they want them to shut up and keep quiet. They didn't want anybody talking about this.
Well,
so yeah. What can it be like today when they're messing with the jet stream?
9,000 of these balloons, or, you know, more than 9,000. I think you said 9,300 something.
Right. Uh-huh.
Doesn't that sound like conspiracy theory? You know, I'm just being crazy. I never even used that term. It disgusts me. Certainly there is a conspiracy there. Somebody had to be making all those balloons. Sort of like kites in a way, almost, huh?
And let's not get ethnic.
No, I said kites.
Oh, okay.
Aren't we in a good mood tonight?
Oh, I'm getting punchy. It's been a long day, I tell you. It's you know, I don't know if you heard the interview I did with Chris Bolin.
I did.
But I didn't know that about how they got the term kikes. They refused to make an X. They were illiterate, and they refused to mark an X in the registry book, so they drew a circle. And so they call them, you know, that's Yiddish kike is circle. Kike, kike, kike. And that's where they got the nickname. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's all kinds of really cool stories behind all the terminology we use.
Yeah.
It's going to cost you an arm and a leg.
Okay, tell us that story.
Well, you know, that's one of the terms that I think it had something to do with somebody actually having an arm and a leg amputated, you know, during war times. And that became a heavy price to pay. So they said, well, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg for this favor, let's say. And it became a figure of speech.
Yeah, I dare. Yeah, I guess in your those Civil War hospitals, especially, they had a lot of disfigured, you know, men that survived that they didn't get blood poisoning. They got their legs chopped off. And, you know, I saw that on Dances with Wolves, by the way.
Oh, yeah, at the very beginning of the movie, that was the topic. Gets your attention right away, doesn't it?
That's right. Didn't want his leg chopped off, and so he committed a suicide, or tried to, and away it goes. Yeah, that story, again, just drives home how much, how easy it is to keep secrets at the government level, and it's got to be much, much, much more involved in today's world, okay? We just got so much more technology, so much that's above top secret. And like we've talked in other shows, the Washington Post's article on top secret America is just huge. 854,000 people with top secret clearance. I mean, that just blows my mind. The more I think about that, the more I'm just stunned. How many people do we need to keep secrets in this country?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to get easier just to tell somebody else the truth, you know, than trying to keep the secret.
Yeah. Then we've got this, this whole, the guest tonight on my show, we just discussed the purchase of America by the Chinese Communist Party. And that is very, very disturbing. The more you think about it and try to, you know, put the pieces together and connect the dots, Don, it's the way that I think this country is going to be destroyed.
If that's permitted to happen, I mean, who all is behind the legal process of this whole thing? I mean, they're just one after another, just throwing every law they created in the books out the window, just to suit their monetary concerns.
Yeah, and we wouldn't really be having to have this trade deficit if we'd followed the founding fathers' protectionist tariffs are the best thing for the country to remain sovereign. You tear down those protective tariffs and be a part of a global village. Well, why is it that China suddenly has all these Federal Reserve notes, billions and about trillions and trillions of dollars of them, and the powers that be, Hillary Clinton and the rest of the Rothschild elite are just busy whacking down the sovereignty of America in a major way.
Mm-hmm. It also fits into the plot that we've been talking about on this show for the past 3 years, and that's the real estate money laundering. Mm-hmm. There have got to be constitutional provisions that stop this from happening. Certainly, within the context of the powers that the Congress has, and their power to veto. If they're all going along with this, then who is collecting all this money that's coming in? Do you honestly think it's the state? Let's say on the show you were talking, for those listeners, basically you're describing two sets of people, or two categories. Someone from China can invest $500,000 and promise 10 jobs from this, and that's Kmart's doing that all, or not Kmart? They were doing it, but this is the thing that Walmart's doing. Kmart and Walmart get tax abatements from local communities. The communities pay for building the infrastructure. They put up these mega stores, promise to give 300 full-time jobs and benefits. And, of course, nobody other than maybe a couple of handful of management people actually get full-time jobs, and no one has the guts to make them comply with the contractual agreement.
Right.
Okay. Why should they get tax abatements? They're making billions of dollars off of these companies every quarter. Walmart is one of the largest, if not the largest, company in the whole world in terms of the amount of cash. Why should they be afforded those opportunities? They use extortive measures in forcing American manufacturers to match the prices of their slave labor goods that they import from places like China and other parts of Southeast Asia and South and Central America. And they're forcing American businesses out of business. Should a company like that be allowed to operate in this country?
Well,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, should it be? And I think there are probably plenty of laws to that at one point or another was addressed and made clear that that was not going to go on. But, you know, you're dealing with crime. Your organized crime is pretending it's your government. You know, mm-hmm. And I really take issue with all of this. And I didn't mean to throw you off, but it's...
No, it's right on point.
You know, it's pertinent to what's going on.
Well, I also, you know, this Washington Times article or ed-op on Thursday the 22nd of July was, you know, I just now got this sent to me, and I got to tell you, that's an incredible piece. Again, this is over a month old, Don, written by Jeffrey Kuhner. And again, the Washington Times has got to be one of the most, if not the most, liberal-leaning rags in America. I've been sickened by some of the things they've come up with before, but this one is right on point. Mr. Kuhner is just basically calling for his impeachment in very strong language, and he's right on. He's absolutely right on. He said, his first sentence, President Obama has engaged in numerous high crimes and misdemeanors. The Democratic majority in Congress is in peril as Americans reject his agenda. Yet more must be done. Mr. Obama should be impeached. He is slowly, piece by painful piece, erecting a socialist dictatorship. We are not there yet, but he is putting America on that most dangerous path. He is undermining our constitutional system of checks and balances, subverting democratic procedures and the rule of law, presiding over a corrupt gangster regime, and assaulting the very pillars of traditional capitalism. Like Venezuela's leftist strongman Hugo Chavez, Mr. Obama is bent on imposing a revolution from above, one that is clearly polarizing America along racial, political, and ideological lines.
Well, and all of this, everything that's going on is the fomentation of a race war.
Mm-hmm.
The language they're using, the intentional guests they're bringing on to news shows that want to complain about how their group is being unfairly treated because of staged events that are covered all over the place by the media. You know, don't report the truth, report a fabricated story and make people think it's true because that's what you're reporting. All of them together, like this is, you know, it's so important, that's why everybody has it. But it's all just programming. Now, before I went on my rant, I was also going to say that the other eligible type, and this is for a green card. These people get a green card. You put up $1 million and provide 10 jobs, then you get a green card. All your people working for you get green cards. and you can bring in your family. They become eligible for green cards in 5 years for money. Okay, so we're infiltrating. We're charging people now to infiltrate.
No. They, in 5 years, they get to become full-fledged citizens.
Yeah. Right. That's what I meant. They become American citizens. Okay, whatever that means today. So aren't the people sneaking over the border in Mexico kind of getting an easy deal? You know, why are they getting such an easy deal?
Well, the story behind the story, Don, is you've got people buying into this, and they have since 1992. The people with the money in south of the border are your Mexican drug lords. Mm-hmm. that are buying EB-5 visa program.
Mm-hmm. I lost your audio. I would ask you to repeat that last sentence for me and the listeners.
Okay.
You sort of bottlenecked there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, the legislation is called EB-5 visa. I'm assuming EB stands for Economic Benefit Level 5. There's regional centers that are established across the country, really. And this is not just the Chinese that are taking advantage of this $500,000 program. You put up this money, basically you're just, you know, buying the Immigration and Customs Service to just give you preferential treatment.
We had an announcement about Hamas getting a huge sum of money. You remember that?
Yes.
A few months ago. That was so they could come over here. Oh, no. That's going to go into somebody's pocket. We got to be finding out whose pocket that goes into. You know, where these people are intended to go. We're paying for the privilege of being infiltrated by foreign countries. Imagine that. How else do you describe that?
Yeah, the pilot program, this is right on Wikipedia, Don, when you just Google in EB-5 visa program, and you see that Wikipedia has quite an entry in it. These regional centers are the ones who are allowed to receive this money, $500,000 on one level and $1 million on the other. Well, again, who in the Hispanic community south of the border can come up with $500, let alone 500 pesos? The drug lords, yeah.
Or the gangs that are probably financed, like they finance Al-Qaeda in the Middle East.
So you get these drug lords coming in. They basically then contract with your slaughterhouses, your rendering plants, you know, your blood and guts, dirty jobs. And so they then get contracts with the management to provide the labor. And I've seen the contract, Don. They promise these migrant workers as little as 3 to 4 years, they'll get complete citizenship status provided by the protecting drug lord. A lot of the 20 million illegal immigrants are under this structure. Not all, but I'd say the vast majority of them are. So they come, they get their green card, they get a job, they get Social Security, they get their health benefits. All of this is brokered by these regional centers. Well, the regional centers are no more than pimps, Don, and this is prostitution of people.
Yeah, I mean, this is crazy. It makes you wonder too. You know, there's this organ donor market, you know, that's been written about for a number of years, mm-hmm. where they take if they need some eyes or they need a liver or a spleen or kidneys or some body part, they'll dispose of a prisoner just to supply that part to the international medical community.
Right on.
At $300,000 or more a pop.
And you've got 350, 360 million people in the gulag system there in China. These are the latest figures I saw with Amnesty International. And these people don't have a say. I mean, they're jailed for, what, 5 years just for getting pregnant without permission type of thing? I mean, they're incredible silly rules and laws to get people into the system. And there they have to go to the factory and produce Walmart stamp.
Imagine how many people they'd have if they all got permission.
I mean, yeah.
It's crazy, you know. That's a population out of control. Where are all the regulations being placed on them? You know, why aren't they paying the carbon tax? They've got almost a third of the world's population in one country.
Yeah, and producing more greenhouse gases than any place else by far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read a story up in here in the High Uinta Mountains of Utah and in the Rockies of Colorado and over into the Sawtooth Ranges in Wyoming. There's a 5-year study of these brook trout and native cutthroat trout. Even in Utah, in the high Uintas, they found an ever increasing lead, mercury, and cadmium count in these pristine fish. When they couldn't figure out, you know, there's not any mine tailings leaching into the water. Why does it keep spiking? Well, it's the jet stream are carrying all these high level toxins from the Chinese mainland, basically, and it's coming into the precipitation. So the snowpack, the resulting streams and reservoirs are, you know, have increasingly higher heavy metal counts. You know, at what point do we say enough?
Yeah, it's you know, I opened the show talking about this Corexit situation an hour north of Tampa, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And this information is almost unknown. Corexit is probably not heard by the average Floridian. Just people really awake and paying attention to what's going on in the world. Other people have been approached, people who own swimming pools, and asked if they would be willing to submit a sample for testing their pool, which is even further away from Tampa. You know, and it's like they're saying, what's Corexit? So you're dealing with an issue of a lot of people who are still asleep or in denial. It's everything is to make us look bad and them look good. You know, I received an email from Daryl Dickinson earlier this week, and it's got two pictures in it. It's got a picture of the American gold medalist, Lindsey Vonn. She was going to have to give her medal back. She was a downhill skier, by the way. Okay, she was the fastest in the world. She won the gold medal. She has to give it back because the Olympic officials have determined that the short-legged Mac Daddy in Washington deserves the medal more than Lindsey Vonn, because no one has ever gone downhill faster than he has.
Oh, golly.
So, you got to see the picture, too. It's great. This was maybe his first vacation, you know, when he was in the Senate. I don't know.
Well, he's not really gone downhill. He just sold the public a falsified bill of goods. That's all there is to it. He was never at an elevation. He was just the ultimate con man.
Mm-hmm.
But again, nothing happens by accident. I don't blame Mr. Obama. It's just the handlers, the people at the top of the food chain, they handpick who they want in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, you know, he plays a round of golf and they say, you must be tired, go take a vacation. And so he takes a vacation. And he comes back and he says, boy, I really have to do something now. I'm all charged up. So go play a round of golf. Basically, stay out of the way. Don't interfere.
Yeah, and why should we be upset at Tiger Woods? I mean, Obama's screwing the whole country.
Yeah. Did you see that shirt?
I sure did.
Yeah, that's a great photo, too. That's a totally unstaged.
That's right. But, yeah, it's bad news, no doubt about it. And who's going to start the impeachment process? There needs to be some indictments handed down on this guy. Don, it's past a joke.
Well, I think on the Democratic Party in general anyway, you know, certainly that convention committee and those that forged documents or altered the documents. I mean, if they don't contain everything they should have in there, that's in a sense a forgery. You know, they're intending to make the document look genuine, and I'm speaking about the constitutional provisions that were left out.
And the
witnessing and the signatures by the now Secretary of State. Or not Secretary, I mean, I should...
Speaker of the House.
Speaker of the House is what I meant to say.
Nazi P. Loosely.
Yes. And the Secretary of State issue is, you've got collusion between the short-legged Mac Daddy and the Secretary of State asking for a resolution that declares John McCain eligible to run as the president, you know, prior to the short-legged Mac Daddy getting his resolution. Oh, it stinks. It's so crooked. They haven't made anything yet to make that kind of stink go away.
Well, again, and we talked about this, but my sources tell me that the friend of Stanley Ann Dunham's that came forward with these pictures has corroborated, and these pictures, there's ways they verified that was indeed the summer of 1961, July 1961. She was supposed to have been pregnant, 8 months pregnant, almost full term with that bouncing baby bundle of joy.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world did she get into that bikini with a flat tummy?
Yeah, I wrote about those pictures. I had seen them. I didn't have actual copies of them, but I had seen those, and I and a few other people, but quite more qualified than me to determine if that looked like someone who was pregnant, number one. I mean, we could all agree, but that was someone that had never had a baby also. That was what the consensus of the experts that looked at those pictures said. So, again, there are more lies, you see. We keep getting all these lies. We have two lies, two different lies, both of them impossible by the timelines, that the senior went to the University of Hawaii at Manoa, first in 1957 with the Kennedy airlift, but the family and Kenya basically saying that his co-workers saw what a good worker he was, and so they paid his way in 1958. Now, which was it, 57 or 58?
Right.
You see, neither one happened. You have two separate stories on every aspect. Just to complicate things, just to throw people off the track. Well, none of it is true.
Right.
It's simple to understand that. It simplifies it tremendously. None of it is true.
And so how do you know when Barack Obama's lying to the nation?
He's talking.
Yeah, his lips are moving.
Same thing, yeah.
No, you know, you got to look at that. After his birth, it's not even quite 2 weeks. It's more like 10 days. Stanley Dunham leaves her bundle of joy with her mom, and she enrolls at the University of Washington. Yet pictures of her there in September. You think she'd have some pretty swollen breasts with, you know, leaving her little bundle of joy unattended, but no postpartum blues. She's right in the middle of her work there. She's sexually active. This is in 2 weeks, 3 weeks after birth. Give me a break. I mean, that doesn't fit, does it? Why would you leave your little bouncing bundle of joy to go immediately back to Washington to go to school? Mm-hmm. What's wrong with the University of Hawaii?
Yeah. She had a school friend from Mercer Island High School that became a city council person, and that person described her as being, like, really high-strung and making statements like, I can have a baby without having sex. And without getting married, it's kind of a strange comment to make. Certainly one that a teenager would make.
Right.
So,
what was Mrs. Dunham's name, Stanley's mother?
Well, alleged mother, Madeline Lee
Payne.
Madeline Dunham.
Yeah, she was very close and involved with the. With Malcolm X's group, and as a fan of Malcolm X, to the point where, you know, if anything's possible, she was the one that was holed up in Hawaii. The family had to move there. There was some kind of scandal from Washington. They moved to Hawaii. Nobody sees her for almost a year. Yet she's just takes mail and whatever. I submit that it wasn't Stanley Ann Dunham leaving little Barack boy with her mom. It was her mom's baby all along that she was just used to cover. You look at those pictures of Barack as a teenager, you know, those photos, and compare them with Malcolm X. At the same age, I mean, it's stunning how you can't tell them apart.
Mm-hmm. We could agree to disagree, I think, a little bit. If, when you take a turban and put it on the short-legged Mac Daddy and then give him a beard, he looks just like Bin Laden.
Well, so, there's some family genes there, maybe.
Yeah, well, we're speaking about bloodlines here anyway, so... How far are they going to go outside of the bloodline is really one of the questions that you have to ask, because that's very ritualistic for them, especially at this time.
Well, on the other point, though, too, I don't know if he's meant to be anything but a nihilist, an agitator. He's not going to be a ruling class, I don't think. I think he's just being set up to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wouldn't be falling so rapidly, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think he's I think he's going to be used up. Mm-hmm. He's a transsexual. Who knows where he came from? I mean, what are the reasons for sealing his true birth certificate? Shows that he's the son of Malcolm Little.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you talk about. I've read enough of Malcolm X's writings. I was a poli-sci major back when I was going to college at first, and I changed. But I did a whole paper on Malcolm X and that whole movement. And so I read Dreams of My Father from Barack, and it struck me that that's just like copying Malcolm X's ideas of class struggle and.
Now, during the course of my research, especially the first time I was looking at Denison, Texas, a couple of years ago, not knowing of this Eisenhower scandal, I came upon the name of a man who dated a Cindy Dunham, either in the Denison, Texas, or Sherman, Texas area.
Wow.
In the mid-60s. And Cindy Dunham is one of her aliases.
Okay. We're talking about Madeline or Stanley
Ann? No, we're talking about Stanley Ann.
Okay.
Okay. He dated, and also what is interesting is in Texas there's an alleged marriage of Magdalena Maduna. Okay, the spy name that they used to put on that alleged liberation voyage to Australia from the Bagnoli camp in East Italy, which is a fictitious place. So I found that highly interesting. I didn't have enough evidence to talk about it, but you know, maybe I should put it in a little sequel piece or, you know, an appendix to those articles, because I discovered a lot of things that actually fortify much of what I, you know, the conclusions I drew. And some of it's really off the wall stuff. But you, when you see the pictures, it's pretty convincing. So
right.
I wanted to bring that up because one of our listeners reminded me of that point. Mm-hmm. And of course, they like the name Kelly. They give a lot of their girls the first name Kelly as one of their aliases.
Mm.
That's very, very common. That was a name. Actually, I think the Cindy name showed up in Honolulu, too, if I recall. Cindy Dunham.
Yeah. Right.
Of course, they used the name Cynthia as well. Cynthia Ann Dunham. It's amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt about it. They're CIA linked no matter what. So, yeah, this is, again, this Mr. Cooner, this article, just an amazing indictment. And he's right on point, absolutely right on. We're getting set up for class warfare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we've been saying that since the beginning of this Gulf incident, haven't we? Same thing.
Yeah.
They're trying to start a race war on all fronts. Turn the Hispanics against the whites. Turn the blacks against the Hispanics and the whites. All under the pretext that somebody is both from Hawaii and Kenya. You know.
And then, of course, while this is all going on, the Chinese are quietly taking title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that, you know, they haven't mentioned anything, though, about the $47 trillion lien that the Chinese placed on the Federal Reserve and on the U.S. Treasury. $47 trillion. And, well, and the Queen of England is supposed to be involved in that, too. So, you know, there were numerous reports on more than one occasion of substantial trillions of dollars having been stolen. And, you know, under the promise that this was going to revitalize the economy, and it was just outright stolen.
Yeah. Well, so, it's again, just some more debt money. It's Federal Reserve note payables.
Yeah. But then somebody's going to make pocket change on the side here. You know, who gets that money? That 500,000 or that million.
Well, it said, you know, this Wikipedia article says, quote, the investment could only be received by an economic unit defined as a regional center. So they take the money. I don't think they actually give it to the business or owner or American worker. It's all going out to the illegals.
Amazing.
It's a huge story, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, true, we're about out of time.
And oh, golly, it did fly by, didn't it?
Yeah, and I could keep going, but this is your third hour of radio this evening, so I want to give you a break. And
I've got to hit the road at 3 a.m. for a trip, so I've got I better get a little bit of shut eye.
Yeah. Well, if you would give out your website and any information you want to share about upcoming guests on your show, or
It's www.atrueot.com is my blog. Be nice when you sign in. Don't say I'm this or that. We won't go there. That's a whole other can of worms.
But nah.
Nah. And we'll just, the show, we've got a pretty much a wide open mic for the rest of the week. Tomorrow night we'll have the a few of the founders of the Battle Hymn, battlehymn.com. All of this is coming to a head. People are starting to wake up. This guy started Battle Hymn. He has absolutely no idea of the depth of depravity going on until he was shown to him. And I'm talking about pedophilia, Child Protective Services, all of this. So he's putting forth all the money he can put up, and it's going to be substantial. But yeah, we'll probably have him on tomorrow night. And the story behind the story runs from 7 to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday on Pacific time.
Okay, and that's on the it's at the microeffect.com.
Themicroeffect.com. Uh-huh.
Okay, well,
good night.
I thank you for being on the show, and keep your powder dry. And
always watch out for wasps' nests.
Yeah, wasps especially. Yeah, how are you doing? Is it subsiding now?
I've got a mark where they stung me, but I'm okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can go into that next show. You can talk about that a little bit, because that was a pretty interesting event.
Oh, it was bizarre. It was definitely bizarre. Well, good night, Don. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good evening.
All right, you too, Drew. Take care. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and tonight's special guest, Dr. A. True Ott. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and those that had some messages for us. If there was a message and it came through, I brought it up. Want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound at bbsradio.com. Also want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be Jessica Schaub. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.